welcome to the Shedding Light Hunting Stories Podcast, the podcast dedicated to the average Joe and their great hunting stories. I'm your host, Travis Williams. You're listening to episode 218. Well, hey guys, welcome to the show. Hope that you are having a great week. Hope things are going well for you in this spring. And we don't have a long intro today. Not much to promote. You guys know I got a YouTube channel, and you can check that out, Shedding Light Outdoors. You also know that you're always welcome to come on the show. If you'd like to send me an email at sheddinglightod@gmail.com, would love to have you on and hear your hunting stories. Way back, whenever we started this podcast, first episode was 2018, but then in episode 2, and from then was 2019, there was a guy that started listening way back then, just kind of searched, and he reached out, and he was from Australia. Good old Aussie Daniel Mummery, and he came on episode 16, April 1st, and that kind of just started our friendship. And this is a guy that he has always been open and authentic, and just a good guy. And so he and I, we just became friends. And it took us, you know, like a year to kind of start talking more and more. And now we call each other like once a week and just talk about life and talk about our faith, talk about families, that sort of thing. If you guys have been listening along, you know that he came over and Joel and Joel's wife, Tracy, they came over in October and we got to go on some hunts and all of that. Now, Daniel's main passion, besides duck hunting, the main thing that he cares about is this thing called sambar deer. S-A-M-B-A-R. If you want to look one up, it might help you if you've never looked one up. They kind of look like an elk, cool-looking critter. And so Daniel, he's been after a stag for a long, long time. In fact, 20 years, he's been trying to get a stag that has some antler on it. And I'm not going to spoil it. I'm just going to tell you there's a reason he's on this podcast, and we're going to talk about his exciting hunt that he had here about a week and a half ago. Amazing thing that he was able to experience with his dad. His dad is 78 years old, and his dad was by his side during this hunt, and just an incredible story. So excited for this guy. Even if you know you don't care about sambar hunting, it's not, you know, I've never done it before. I'm a whitetail hunter, but just to hear his excitement, it doesn't matter if you're in Australia or the United States, Canada, Mexico, wherever. That the thrill of the chase, it never gets old. And so I think you're going to like the story quite a bit. I do talk a little bit about turkey season that is wrapping up. I think I said in the episode somewhere that I was probably done, but I've actually talked to my wife, and I've got one more hunt in West Virginia up my sleeve. Tomorrow she can get the kids on the bus. I don't have to be in the office till a certain time. So I'm going to slide over to West Virginia and give it one more shot in the morning and see if I can't hear that gobble a little bit earlier than what I did last time and move in on it. And we'll see what plays out. You know, I'm definitely going to get my exercise probably. So looking forward to that. That's it. I said it's a short intro. Thank you guys for coming back. And here's my good buddy, Daniel Mummery.
Ah, there we go. How you doing, man?
G'day, mate. How are you?
Oh. Doing well. It's about 7 in the morning over here. Kids are on the bus. Wife went to the office, drinking some coffee. It's a good morning. How about you?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Just got myself another Milo, as usual, when I talk to you. And, I've just been reading the Word, and then I was just doing a bit of video editing, laying in bed there. And when you said, oh, do you want to do a chat? So,
Your wife, I'm out. Yeah. Nice. Milo, you got to explain that because people don't know. You want me to give a stab at it?
Go for it.
All right. Imagine, you know how sometimes people make like really, really good hot chocolate and like they put in milk and they put in marshmallows and it's like this deep chocolate, just sweet. Take all the milk out, take all the sweetness out, add water to it, and then let it sit for like 3 days and then drink it like lukewarm, and that's Milo.
Yeah, that's right. If you go to your local soil yard and you sift it, that's what it looks like.
It's like you brought some over. No, I think we found some whenever you came over, and I was like, you know, I can understand how this is like healthy for you because it actually, I mean, I actually drank it some. I enjoy it. I'm just messing with you, but it is definitely not the same as like a hot chocolate. Not as sugary, I guess.
No, I do switch between the two depending on how I feel. There's a difference.
Mm.
Yeah, Yeah, how you been, mate? You going well?
Yeah, doing good, man. Turkey season's winding down, and it's been a fun ride. So I kind of sent you and Joel the last turkey hunt, but I don't think I've told it on the podcast. So I can give you a quick update on that last hunt with Ansley because that was a doozy.
Yeah, we got time.
All right, cool. So Ansley, I've been trying to give her an easy hunt. The main property where I take her usually, where we've called birds up into what we call the killing field or whatever, the landowner, he's had his son wanting to hunt a lot more than what he's ever hunted before. And so he's kind of told me, you know, if he's there, I'd prefer you not to come, which I completely get. So that was going to be the case this past, it would have been Saturday. And, but there's a neighboring property where I killed a Jake a few years ago, and it's just a top of a ridge. There's an opening in a fence line, and then you got to call them across the fence, but it's a good spot to put decoys. So that's what we did. Went in there, and I mean, we're like a property or two over, so I was like, not like I'm hunting close to where the sun's hunting. And so put out the Jake, put out the hen. We sat there with our back against a tree, path off to our right, and fence line kind of goes down over the hill to the left, and several gobbles that morning. One down over the hill to our left was the most promising. And sure enough, after sun up, took about maybe 15, 20 minutes, it started getting closer and closer and closer. I'm like, this is it. Finally, we're going to have one come into the decoys and she's going to get her shot. Mind you, we've got like this little pop-up 3D thing in front of us. So not like a full blind, but kind of like the ground thing. And then I got her 410 in a Bog's Death grip, you know, big tripod, so she can, you know, she's not quite big enough to hold the gun on her own. And so, sure enough, we hear him gobble, and then the next thing you know, like, he's getting super close, and he gobbles in behind us. And I'm like, oh, no. Like, directly in behind us, look over my shoulder, and there's, like, probably about 25 to 30 yards, and there's a little bit of a crest of a hill that starts to go down, and he's just below that. So he's probably within 60 yards just over that, and he starts gobbling, and he keeps gobbling. I'm like, and in my mind, I'm like, this is not good, because even if he comes up and sees the decoys, he's going to have to pass right by me to get to it. And I just couldn't see me staying still, Ansley staying still, for that to happen. And so I just felt this panic. I should have just sat there. Looking back now, you know, you always, you know, hindsight's 20/20. And I'm like, so yeah. I elected, I looked back and I'm like, he's not there yet. Maybe I can get her turned around. And if he crests the hill, she can get a shot. So I'm like, Ansley, we're going to do a 180. So I grab the tripod and the gun, and one movement, I do like a quick turn it over, put it on the side of the tree, and I tell her to get up on her knees behind it. She does. And like, he's gobbling, I'm calling, and I'm raking leaves. And I mean, he's just out of sight. I'm like, he's got to come up. And so, you know, she's having a hard time, and I'm just like flustered. So I'm like, this is not the way I wanted this to go, but she can still get him. You know, she can still get him. And like, we do this for, I play this game for like 5 minutes. I'm like, dude, I don't know if I'm going to get him up over here. And next thing you know, I hear the gobble right behind me. I'm like, oh no, another turkey's came in. And I look over my left-hand shoulder, and a tom is out in this woods making its way right toward the decoys.
Yeah, I'm like,
and we're in between them. What I should have done is just stayed focused on the turkey that we were at, because most likely he would have came in to investigate this other turkey. Like, he would have came up the hill and maybe been focused on that. It's not what I did. I see this turkey coming to the decoys. I'm like, well, now we got to get back on this turkey, because it's the decoy shot I've been waiting for her.
Yeah.
So I try and do another 180 without this turkey seeing me. You guys know how that probably went. By the time I finally get the gun out of the tripod, I'm kind of holding the tripod, got Ansley on my lap. I'm trying to get the gun pointed. This turkey sees the movement, takes off, and she can't get on him. I'm like, dang it. And I was like, well, we still got this turkey back behind it. So I put the gun back over there, get back on my knees, and all of a sudden I hear, like, next to like a deer blowing, that terrible sound that turkey hunters know of a nervous putt. And he putts his way away from us. And I'm like, okay, so I had a chance to two turkeys and just blew it. And I'm just like, shaking my head. Ansley can tell that I'm frustrated. She's like, it's okay, Daddy. You might call another one in. I'm like, I was like, maybe I can call another one. So we sit down, still have the gun pointed that way. I'm still in just disgust. And she starts talking and saying something. I was like, Ann, hold on. That bird was just there. Let me call. And I call, and he gobbles again, the one out in front of us. I don't know if it's the same one or different one. I'm like, we got a chance. So I get our gun situated, and another turkey comes up that fence line, comes right to the decoys. And I told her, I was like, this is it. Here we go. I was like, just wait. I was like, let him come to the decoy. Let him come to the decoy. And he came out into an opening, and I thought he was going to jump on my decoy and give her like plenty of time to like settle in. So I didn't tell her to shoot immediately. He gets to that spot. I don't know if he could see us or he didn't like my decoy. All of a sudden, he does a 180, and he's out of there. He does a 180, and he's gone. And she like, there's a few spots where, you know, a more seasoned hunter could get on him and shoot, but she just couldn't. He's bobbing his head. He's moving. I'm trying to stop him with a call, and he's, like, just working his way away.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what did I just do? But, you know, it was one of those things where it's like, I want that situation for her. You know, like, you were there for the first deer hunt and, you know, or first deer, which, you know, we had to hunt four times, but it was fairly, there was a little bit of trickiness in that hunt, but it wasn't like that. But anyhow, I'm disappointed, but I'm not too disappointed because the fact that we had that many birds calling, I talked to Trav Shire and he's been out multiple times and I even heard a gobble. So I'm like, hey, we were blessed to have that moment. And I learned from it. Just, if you got a 7-year old, just keep your butt in the chair and keep your gun pointed at the decoys and just let the chips fall. Don't try anything fancy. So
stick with the plan, man.
Stick with the plan.
Stick with the plan.
Yeah.
So you probably got the Lord up there. He's like, mate, I can't help but think the Lord is like, Travis, I'm sending you a turkey. Just stay still. You turn around. Travis, stay still.
I'll send you another
up again. Right, I'm going to send you a third turkey, and if you don't get it,
yep.
Too bad.
So anyhow, that's I don't know if we have any more hunts for her. I hunted West Virginia and heard a gobble, but that was it. So we'll see how we got till I think it ends on Sunday. So I might be able to get her out one more time, but it's been fun. So what's new? That's what's awesome. New to you?
Plenty is new, mate. I got a new job. Since I was on here last, I think maybe I can't remember if we spoke about that last year. So I've been there for 8 months now, and it's just God given, mate. It's fantastic. Yeah, I couldn't ask for much more. So you know, it's nice to. It's such a difference when someone sees your value, and you know, they back you up, and they say, you know, go for it, do this, do that. You know, I want to see you go places with this. So. It's really cool, mate. I'm learning a lot, and I'm, you know, advancing my skills and becoming more confident in my work, and so I'm really loving that as a landscaper.
I think you got that job. You got that job just before you came over here in October.
I did actually. Yeah, that's right. I got it. That's right. I got it like 3 days before I got on the plane or something. So dude, that's a hectic. Like, it's time. Time is a funny thing. Like, you know, 1 minute you're waiting for something and it takes ages to come. You're thinking about it. We all know, as hunters, we know what it's like. Opening day, this, you know, if you don't get many hunts in a year, you're waiting for your first, second, third hunt of the year. And 1 minute I've been waiting, we're saving up money to come and see you. Next minute I nearly missed my flight. I get back on it. And then it's been 8 months since that whole thing went down and we've had a great time. Like,
crazy.
So time, mate, it's ridiculous. And so, you know, speaking of time, so my little girl, she's 5 now. You and I have been chatting for 5 years, and you know, she's at school. And so this, we're mid duck season at the moment, and so this is her second year walking around the paddocks and, you know, jumping dams with me, mate. And she's loving it. You know, we've done 2 hunts. And that'll probably do us for the season. I'll get out with a mate next time. But she's had a ball, mate, and she handles, you know, the death side of it well. You know, we got we're allowed to shoot 6 ducks this year every day. It can fluctuate depending on what the laws tell us. But this year we can shoot 6, and so on the first hunt we shot 4 out of 6, and then the second hunt which we shot 5 out of 6. It was great, dude. But it took a few dams to get the first couple, and you know, there's a few meters in between the dams, so she did a really good job walking. But we got 3 or 4 ducks, and I said, oh, you know, we might not get a full bag limit. She said, oh, Dad, we have to get two more. We have to get two more. And so we're going around, all right, I'm keeping an eye on the time for Mum, you know. And she's like, oh, we have to get another one. So jump another dam, boom, got another one, you know. So it was perfect, dude. You know, we got 5 plus 4, so 9 ducks. And
my favorite video that you sent me with that is you pop up and there's not only ducks, but there's a fox, and her excitement seeing her first fox, and you know, there's a fox I saw, you know.
This is the thing, mate, like, you know, as hunters we know that there's more to it than the kill, and you know, there's plenty of times I don't kill much and I'm used to that, but this year's been pretty fruitful when it comes to that. And on the way out there on the first hunt, she said, oh, Dad, I wonder if we could see a fox. And I'm going, well, you know, it's like you saying to Ansley, like, oh, I guess I could, there's a chance I could call another turkey. I was like, yeah, well, you know, it's going to be half an hour after sun up, you know, yeah, or an hour later. I said, look, there could be a fox maybe going back to its den after hunting all night. So, dude, we jump this fence, park the car, jump over into the paddock, and we're walking along, and it's probably a good 200-meter walk, and there's a big dam wall, and then it sort of, then the dam is like the water's on the outside, and there's no other way to sneak up. So we're walking through this sort of knee-high sort of grass for me, and it's about, you know, chest height for her, and she's walking through, and she's peeling the grass apart with her hands, and getting through it, and then she stops and picks a few flowers and picks a few bits of grass, and it was like, all right, you know, I'll let her do that stuff. And it's like, all right, keep going, let's go. So we sneak up and I explain what to do. She's got her earmuffs on, and she's looking at me, you know, for permission to creep up. Said, yep, go for it, creep up and have a look for the ducks first. So we spot a heap of water hen and some swans, and through the reeds. And then I said there's some ducks over there, some black ducks. And they were too far away for a shot. And so we just waited, and all of a sudden they just turn and swim straight to us. I was like, you ready? And so I sort of like a bit of a sniper, but obviously a shotgun, you know, through the reeds, I had them lined up, and boom, just dropped this duck. It was still on the water. The others flew up and took off. And anyway, about 15 seconds later, I'm standing up. She goes, Dad, there's a fox. There's a fox just takes off. It must have been, you know, just walking around, or just, I couldn't see it. I wasn't looking for it anyway. And it was like 55, 60 meters just across the dam, and it was just banging it, just absolutely moving. So I flicked it onto the full choke, because we got shoot with an under and over. So the second shot's a full choke. So I just, boom, give him a shot at about 65 meters with a shotgun. And I saw his ears go back, and I reckon he might have got a couple, but off he went. So she was stoked.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. It's cool hunting with kids, and I've just learned you got to have some patience. You know, like you said, let them stop and pick the flowers and, you know, those sorts of things. I try and balance that, because I'm like, man, I wanted her to get a turkey. But then I'm like, she's not disappointed right now. It's not like she's 7 years old, and it's just like, it's about her having fun. And I just got to remind myself that, like, I want her to be able to appreciate it. And so if it doesn't happen till next year, or the year after, or whatever, it's okay. Just go out there and enjoy time. Make sure she's having a good time. So I have to remind myself of that, because I can get frustrated. I can try and make her move a little bit fast or whatever. And it's just like, it's a slow game with a 7-year-old. So
yeah, that's right, mate. And you know, I think if it's fun and she's having a great time with Dad, like, we know that's what matters. And we also know that, you know the excitement of what it means to actually harvest something, and she hasn't experienced that yet.
Mm-hmm.
But let me tell you, mate, it is worth the wait.
Yeah.
So I can speak from personal experience. I've waited a long time for a certain something in my hunting career, and I'm sure we will dive into that in a minute. Yeah.
So let's do it. So you just talked about, I just went back and looked, April 1st, 2019. You came on the show for the very first time. That's where our friendship kind of started, and talked about some kangaroo hunts. I think we talked about your first Samber deer, which was a hind. So to bring people up to speed, for our whitetail listeners that might not have listened to that, Samber is a little bit smaller than an elk. You know, a little bit smaller in the, you know, they don't have like big giant antlers, but they have decent sized antlers. And so you got a stack for a male, and you got a hind, which is what you guys call basically the female, or, you know, doe or cow, like, you know, whatever. So, so you started hunting these whenever you were with like your dad as a kid. And I think on that show, we talked about how you got your first hind. So kind of bring us up to this year and what's been the goal since then. And we'll kind of get into this, this.
Yeah, sure, mate. So, yeah, that first episode we spoke about the two deer that I'd shot. My first deer was a young yearling stag, but it was just a yearling male. And then I shot a hind a couple of years later.
Okay. So that right there, I thought that you had shot a stag before, so I was confused by this, but it was just, so it didn't have any, hardly any headgear.
Yeah, he was a year and a half old, no antlers, just little, you'd call it a button buck.
Okay.
So I really didn't really class him as a stag, you know.
You like button bucks though, right?
Hey, I'm not gonna, you know, go there. Hey, I'm not the one that shot the button buck, mate. All right,
that's true. Like, Joel shot the button buck. Yours had, I think, a little forky there at the top.
Mine had some little forks on it. Okay, so that is far bigger than a button buck. I would never shoot a button buck. Why would you ever do that?
I don't know.
If you're a desperate Australian, you might do that.
Out of coffee right there listening to this. So sorry, if you don't know what we're talking about, whenever Daniel came over, he shot a doe his first night, and then Joel shot a button buck, and then Daniel ended up shooting a four-corn whitetail about 2 or 3 days later. So anyway, that's what we're talking about. Anyhow, go ahead.
So back to the Samber. Yes, they're a bit smaller than an elk. They're our biggest deer in Australia, and then a red stag is next under that. They've got 3 points on each side, and a real good trophy is anything over 30 inches long. Okay. So you run the tape up the back of the antler from the coronet up to the tip, and that's how you measure. So my lifelong dream and goal as a hunter has been to secure a stag with some antler. And they are very wary deer. They come from India. They're tiger's their main predator over there. And so, you know, that's in their genes, is to be so, super wary. And so, you know, that's why their class is probably Australia's toughest game animal, in that sense, especially when it comes to deer. So, mate, I've been pursuing deer for 20 years. Started when I was 12, got my junior license, and dad would take us camping and hunting and things like that on school holidays. And so, you know, at 18, I got my full license. I shot two deer by the round about that time. And then I had an 8-year drought. And then I spoke with you a few years ago when I shot another hind, which was just an awesome moment for me. To do that on my own, and up in some really nice country, it was pretty awesome. And so, you know, the dream's been to get a stag, and every trip I think, is this the trip? And mate, I've shot at a stag when I was 18 on my first solo hunt, and I hit the tree by the width of my thumb. You know, if I'd been an inch to the left, like, it would have just dropped him. But that's just what happened. And then I remember another hunt where, which I actually told, I crossed the river and I unloaded my gun, and I walked another 200 yards and I forgot to reload, and I went to click shoot the stag, and this went click and there's no bullet. So, you know, these constant things would happen, these mistakes or these learnings would just come about, and it would create frustration because I know that the opportunities to get a shot at a stag is very here and there, especially depending on how much time you spend in the bush.
Yeah.
And so for me, mate, I spend about, on an average, 10 to 12 days in the bush a year. There's blokes still spend 100 days in the bush a year. So you really can't compare. It's a personal pursuit, you know? And so you know, knowing that if I stuff up an opportunity, I don't know when I'll get another one.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a 3-hour, 4-hour drive for me. I've got to take, you know, annual leave to get up there and spend it for a good amount of time. And so, yeah, that's what it takes to pursue these deer. So this year, mate, I went out on one, I did one scout and I did one hunt. And, you know, again, you, if people want to look at the videos, I've got a YouTube channel there at Hunters Ministry. You can see this year's hunts and other hunts before that as well. But this year, I was so close to getting a deer again on my first hunt of the year, mate. Like, I went up there with a couple of fellas, and long story short, he'd bumped a hind in his gully, and she ran down into my gully, and I was on this old mining track because they used to mine up in there and do logging and things. I thought, oh, I'm not going to see a deer on this old overgrown track. I'll get off the track, and I walked up a game trail, turned left. I'd probably been there for about 2 minutes, and I could hear tow, 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 could hear footsteps coming. And so I had the bolt down closed, ready to go. I knew it was going to be a deer, and I could not pick with my hearing which way it was going to go. Anyway, it runs exactly where I was just standing, down on that road, on that sort of old logging track. And I could see colour flashing through the trees, the bushes. It was 20 yards away, and I couldn't even see it. That's how thick it was. And I thought, you're joking. Like, that's just the kind of stuff that happens to me. Like, I was just there. I make a decision, and the deer runs straight past. Like, so, you know, that's just what happens. But, and so that about 7 weeks later, I planned a trip for 7 weeks later with my dad, and we went to a spot we hadn't been to for hunting before. We'd been past there as kids years ago. He took us up there to look around. And so we studied the map, mate, for about, 6 or 7 weeks, and it's a real high altitude compared to where we usually go. You know, you're probably 200 or 300 meters higher in elevation. And it was right up in the high country, up in the snow gums. Elevation's probably about 1,500-1,600 meters. You can Google that or ask Joel Fulton how many feet that is. So we leave on May the 2nd, and it's a Friday. I took a day off for it, and we leave Friday morning or Thursday, sorry, Thursday morning at 4 a.m., and, about a 4.5-hour drive. And so we fuel up at the main town, and we just can see the sun coming up over the mountains there. And it's a bit of a – by the time we get there, it's sort of, you know, you're starting at gentleman's hours, sort of 8:30, quarter to 9. And we had a rough idea where we wanted to go, but we didn't know we were going to camp or anything like that. And so we pick our way up there. It's a really rocky track. It made Dad a little bit like motion sickness and stuff, which doesn't usually happen, but he's getting older. He's 78 now.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you about this before we get too much further. So your dad, he's a little bit older guy, and, big old white beard, you know, mop on his head. And but what's interesting is just like, whenever I think about a 70, you said 78?
78, yeah.
Whenever I think of a 78-year-old man, I think of somebody sitting at home watching TV, you know, maybe not that active. But your dad, before he went on this trip, not that long ago, just got done with a crazy trip. Tell me real quick, I just want our listeners to kind of get a feel for what kind of man your dad is.
I appreciate that, mate. He's a champion. He's a determined man, and you know, I think it's the era he grew up in as well. He was born in 1946, and you know, he's done a lot of hard physical work in his life, and he's got a strong will, and he loves the pursuit of you know, the deer, but something that really intrigues him is the Tasmanian tiger. It's supposed to be extinct. I don't believe it is. A lot of people don't believe it is. But there's this, it's, you know, it's like Bigfoot. It's like these things that intrigue us and go, I wonder. But we know that Tasmanian tiger once existed. So you know, has been in contact with people from down in Tasmania and, you know, people that have written books and, you know, had their two eyes see these animals. And so what he did was he's for the last 3 years, mate, every March through till April, he will go for about 6 weeks and he camps on the remote west coast on an air mattress under a tarp with all different sorts of weather conditions, and he sticks it out. He puts about 9 trail cameras up and he sweeps the sand clear and he checks for tracks. He loves tracking animals. And, mate, he spent 6 weeks after being helicoptered into this area, like pretty much, if you can, what's that movie with the Spalding thing? Wilson?
Oh, a Castaway, yeah. Yeah.
Castaway, right? It's pretty much the same as Castaway. and he just goes there, mate. He just does it. He loves his own company. And he just looks around for these animals and does what he can, you know, puts cameras up and does this and does that. Anyway, he's a champion, you know, and to do that for 6 weeks is a huge effort. I mean, you've all seen that show Alone, you know, he's done a bit of that, but obviously he had a few comforts. But it's for a 78-year-old man sleeping on an air mattress for 6 weeks. And going through all sorts of weather, mate. He's a real goer. So,
yeah, I sleep on an air mattress for one night, and I'm pretty well toast. So, yeah,
yeah, me too. So, anyway, that's my dad, and he's my role model, and you know, my best mate, and I've been hunting with him for 20 years, and so that's why this story is extremely special.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so you guys get up into the high country a little bit, start moving, and you weren't sure if you're going to camp.
That's right. So we pick our way along and we stop and have a look at a bit of a viewing spot, and then we come across a hut and we have a look at this hut and we keep going and keep going. And I don't know how long later it was, but we pull up to this spot and there's this water hole. I thought, oh, we'll go and have a look at that. Go and check it out. No intentions of camping anywhere, you know, close to this. We're just going to have a look. We get out and he's like, oh, you better get your gun. I said, oh, yeah, all right, better get my gun. And so we do that. I've got my, you know, standard shoes on. I'm not even in camo gear. And off we go. And he's like, oh, we'll just, you know what it's like as a hunter. You just got to look over the ridge. Just got to look over the ridge. And so we look over the ridge and just gorgeous country, mate. Like just sucking you in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like, oh, I said, oh, should we go? Should we go and get our stuff? He's like, no, we'll just go another couple of 100 meters. We go another 100 meters. I said, Dad, we've got to turn around and get our stuff and then do this properly. So that's what we do. He said, yeah, you're right. So we go back, unload, set up camp, because who knows what will happen and how long we're going to be away for. We sneak back into where we were and we continue along. And I knew where we were because we'd had a good look at the maps and we knew it was good country. We were going to be, you know, we were hunting sort of southwesterly, down into a big saddle, and then we're going to go up the other side. And we're coming down and the visibility is sort of, 50 to 200 meters in the right spot. And just I'll try and picture for you. Dead, like eerie snow gums. Eerie, dead gray trees, like Snow White, if you can remember that from years back.
Yep.
The original, real eerie stuff.
That's a good way to picture it.
Yeah, awesome stuff. And so we're coming along and just deer droppings everywhere, fresh, you know, like squash grass, there's tracks everywhere. And like anticipation was high. You're just looking for a bit of a back line. You're looking for a bum hanging out from behind a tree or something like that. Not my dad's bum, deer's bum. And anyway,
we come along.
just in case, you know. We come along and we hit the edge of where we were, and big drop off and down into a valley, and we just sit there in glass and have something to eat. Dad cooks up some bit of soup in his jet boil, and Then we head off down and into this saddle, and it's getting on in the afternoon now. We find a really big water hole. I thought, we've got to put a camera up here. So we did that. And, you know, me being a typical mummery, I bought the cheapest batteries I could find, and they were brand new, and I put them in, and it said half full.
Oh, no.
So we're like, oh, idiot. And we knew we had better batteries at camp, but, you know, it was about three quarters of a mile away, and I wasn't going to stuff around. So we hunted back, and we got back with about an hour of daylight left. So we have a bit of a cook up, and, you know, it was for May, like for May, it should be a lot. It feels like it should be cooler than it is. Up there, it was fresh, but in town here, like it feels like today was the first frost we've had, and really we should have been getting frost 3 weeks ago. But anyway,
you guys are headed into winter, right?
Heading into winter, yes, right. So up where we were, we've only got in the middle of June, you can't go up there anymore until October because they shut the gates. You can't drive a vehicle in there. So that's why we're getting in there while we could.
Okay.
So cracking weather, perfect weather, the way it is at the moment. So we get back to camp and the sun's going down in the west there. And, you know, I'm cooking up some salmon fillets. I've never had salmon fillets hunting in my life. And we just, you know, ramp the cooking up a little bit, something a bit nicer. And, you know, Dad gets a fire going. If you want a good fire, you go camping with Doug Mummery. That thing about it. That fire will always be as big as a vehicle. So that's what he does. He sets the fire up, and we've got our swags rolled out, and which is just a bit of canvas and a sleeping bag inside, and we've got a bit of a tarp. So, and we talk about where we should hunt the next day, and we decide, okay, it was absolutely beautiful where we put that camera, and we thought we better come back here and sit and wait. And I said, well, I reckon we should give it a day's break. And we'll come back on the third day. We'll sit here and then we'll cruise home, you know, that night. Yeah, let's do that. That's good. So we wake. I said, oh, he's like, we'll get up early. We've got to get up early. We haven't been getting up in the dawn for too long. We need to do that again, you know, prime time. Yeah, righto, let's do that. Anyway, just before the sun goes down, he's like, we might just wake up when we wake up. What do you reckon? I said, oh, righto. I thought, ah, well, you know, he's 78. Oh, he can have his way. And yeah. So we do that. You wake up with the sun. It was really nice to do. And Dad loves his porridge for brekkie. So this time he didn't do that just to save time. And we ended up having a bite on the go. Got our gear ready, bit of a light frost. And in the ute and off we went. We decided to hunt north, and there's a big ridge, and the road runs along the ridge for miles and miles. And so you can pull off anywhere. But there's one spot we've been studying, and there's a bit of a nice bench and a few cliffy spots and a few bluffs and a few things like that. And I thought, yeah, we had no idea where we were going to actually start hunting. And what we do is, as you poke along the road, you always sort of where the graders have pushed a bit of a gouge in the road for the water to run off, you always check those muddy spots. You never know if a deer's crossed over there, right?
Yeah.
So we pull up, man. It's probably like, we're probably talking 8 o'clock now, right? It's 2 hours into the day. Yeah. So we stopped and looked at this over this view of the whole valley and some big mountains, and we just took some photos and just really soaked it up, you know. We weren't in a rush, even though, you know, the first few hours is prime hunting. So we get back in the car and poke along, and we come across one of these little water run races where the graders cut a bit of a gouge in the road and push the water away when big storms come. And so you always stop and check out these muddy spots, and you wouldn't believe it, there's deer tracks dead fresh, like this morning, last night, dead fresh. Like I said, right, we're starting here. You can't get better than that. So drive another 50 metres, pull the vehicle in across where we can. There's nowhere to park. It's just, you know, sort of get up off the road and park up on the side of the hill there. Get our gear on and, off we go. So we sneak in and, you know, again, thick, really eerie, grey, trees that have all been burnt from ridiculously hot fires years ago. Underneath, there's all this luscious growth. It's really long, like snow grass and some shrubs. And you can sort of, you know, if you put if you open your hand into a palm and then put it in front of your other hand, that's sort of what you're looking through with the branches, and you're trying to spot, you know, a bit of color through the branches and things like that at a distance. And so we're sneaking along, and we knew that any shot, Travis, would be within 50 meters, 60 yards max. So we're probably hunting for about half an hour. Found some really nice game trails. They sort of run parallel with the ridge. So obviously that's their traveling route. and then it sort of, there were some really nice spots where they're sort of just really light little gullies, and they'd crest down in toward the bluffs. And there were some fresh droppings, and then there was maybe 2-day-old droppings and week-old droppings. So nothing that morning. And we knew that they liked that area. So we're poking along, and sort of half an hour into it, I run a thing called I've got a bino chest harness, like a rig, a pouch, I mean. And then I also run a thing called a safari sling. And so instead of the usual sling that goes over your shoulder, I throw it over my shoulder, my other shoulder, and it cradles the gun across my body.
Okay.
So it's got two, yeah. And so I can actually use two hands, and it just sits there. And so I was getting frustrated, man, because I'm trying to glass ahead, but then I'm trying to also be ready for a shot. And the two straps of each, like the bino straps and the rifle strap, were getting caught up on me and all this junk. So I'm getting frustrated, and I'm thought, oh, far out. So I took the gun off, kept my binos on, and I just carried my gun in my right hand, and I glassed with my left. And if I saw anything decent, I would put the gun down and glass both hands. And so we're coming along, man, and we're probably coming around close to 9 o'clock now. I've been hunting for almost an hour. And we come to sort of, we're in some really nice, there's a lot of sun poking through into these grassy spots. And our plan or hope was that the deer would be up high getting a bit of sun, the first rays on the eastern facing side. And I'd glass and glass and, you know, a few more steps. And then you break a couple of sticks that are underneath this long grass. And so, you know, dead quiet. You're breaking sticks all the time and you're frustrated. Anyway, I spot this really nice, it's almost like it was 200 meters away, and it was like grassy bench. So, you know, the mountain would drop away, and then it would like flatten out. And like those things, they turned me on, man. Like, that's great country, you know, and it's fantastic. And so you're getting excited, you're glassing it, and there's, you know, there's patches. You could see a deer anywhere. And Dad said, well, what do you want to do? I said, well, I kind of want to stay at this elevation we're at. But I said, we've got to have a look at that. You know, it's another ridge opportunity. It's like, I've got to see what's over the ridge. I've got to see what's down on that grassy bench. And then at least maybe next time we can hunt that, and I'll come back up here and we'll keep going. So, yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. All right. So on our left is this plateau that we want to hunt. There's a big boulder, sort of a bluffy sort of thing that was covered in grass, but it was a big rock. And it was right in front of us. So we had to either go up and around it to keep going where we were going to go, or we just shoot straight down this big, like, I'm going to call it like a ski slope. It was like clear compared to everything else. And so it was like a ski slope running straight down to this grassy bench. I was like, all right, we'll go down here. So we're going 20 meters after our discussion. And I had this thought, I don't know where it came from. I believe it came from my 20 years of experience, because I think all these things I've done in the past that I've made mistakes that have lost me a deer, I've been like nailing it ever since. But this one, and I'd always find myself finding another mistake that I made that I'd never made before that lost me the next year. And so this time, this thought came to me, don't get tunnel vision, because I was very focused on this grassy spot. And so I was like, oh yeah, better look around. And so
I've been there so many times. Like, you see a spot, you're like, oh, if I get to that spot, and then on the way there, you're just not, you know, you kind of lose sight of anything else, and you end up jumping a deer next to you, or you bump something. 100%. Yeah. Yeah. I've been there. 100%.
Yeah. Many times. So you get what I'm saying. So don't get tunnel vision. Right. Okay. Better look around. I look to my right. Nice game trail. That's cool. Glass this spot that I'm focused on again. Take a step. Look to my left. What's that? And I was like, there's this big, again, around this big boulder thing I just explained, there was a beautiful, like, open spot, probably 15 meters round, and the sun was just, it was just catching all the sun. Anyway, I looked left. I was like, what is that? And it was a different color. And I sort of, like, half a second, I was like, no, surely not. And I put my binos up, and I could just see brown hair, and I could see, and I just thought, what? And I could just see an ear and one brow tine, and I could see the ear focus in our direction. And I was like, stag. And like, and I knew, dude, I knew he was a stag. I knew he was like mature. I could just tell from the antler on him that I could see, which was only the first part. You guys call them brow tines, don't you?
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a mature stag. And all this is happening in about 2.7 seconds. And I said to Dad, stag, don't move. And it was at probably, he wouldn't have been 45 yards, mate. And so he was onto us, which we knew he was they were going to be close. I said, stag, don't move. I dropped down on one knee. I closed the bolt. Oh, I didn't even realize I closed the bolt. I just did it out of habit. And I lined him up. And I thought, I better check my safety. And I checked my safety, it's on. I never turn it on. So I flicked that, flicked it forward while my head's down on the rifle. I breathed twice, and I had to sort of like lean to the left a little bit to get around some twigs. I breathed, and I put the crosshairs on him, and I sort of drew a line from one side to the other, and it just went boom. And, mate, he just turned, and off he went. But the thing is, he didn't react. He didn't turn like he'd been hit. He just turned and sort of went up the hill. And I turned to Dad. I said, Dad, I said, we just shot a stag, old man. We just shot a stag. And he's just like, he didn't know how to react, Trav, because he hadn't seen the deer. There was three trees. Like, if you put your fingers up in front of you, but you turn them a little bit, they were like blocking his view.
Oh, okay.
And so, yeah. He was just going off my reaction. And later on he told me, he's like, I didn't realize you were serious until I heard you breathing so heavily.
Just mess with your dad and just, you know, shoot a random.
Just shoot into a tree and just get him excited.
Yeah.
Oh, so, mate, I said, we've done it. Like, I said, like, I knew. I said, like, oh, I started to calm down a bit. And like, hang on a second. Like, you know, you haven't seen him yet.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, I was very confident, Trav, because I had this perfect shooting lane. There was gum, like, you know, what am I talking here? Probably 10-inch gum trees on the left. I had some shrubs on my right, and I just had this perfect path for the bullet, and I couldn't have missed.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, boom, off he went. And Dad said, well, let's go find him after a couple of minutes. And so we walked the same path that the shot was taken at, and straight up to him and got up there. And the first thing I did was check the tree, because I've shot the tree before. And I was like, no, there's no bullet hole in the tree. That's good. So to describe it for you, mate, he was standing in sort of 3 foot high snow shrubs. Don't know what exactly what they were called, but they were some sort of a shrub very high up on the body. And looking back from his view, as I said, he was onto us. I think he might have heard those sticks breaking or some grass, pardon me, but he wasn't really certain of what we were, because when I was viewing what he could see, he really could have probably only seen from my shoulders up. Mm-hmm. And then when I knelt down on my knee, he probably couldn't see me at all.
Yeah.
So that was, it gave me time. So I'm standing where he was. I'm looking around for blood, not a drop of blood anywhere. And because it's such thick grass and shrubs, I couldn't see any tracks. There was no, I didn't even know which way he went. I just knew that he turned and ran up to the right-hand side there.
So was he pretty well broadside, or was he quartering it away?
I thought he was dead broadside, but I could only see the crease in his shoulder. I could see the front of his front leg there, and that's what I aimed for. And so Dad starts looking around, and I'm sort of staying closer to the shot site, and he finds a game trail, and he starts following that because, you know, they like to take the easiest route, especially when they're hurt. And so he's probably 100 meters from me, and I thought, oh, I'll better catch up with Dad in case he gets onto it or finds something. So can we dropped all the gear, by the way. And so here we are, I'm stalking along, and I'm looking. And I see Dad up there, so I go to catch up with him. And I just look up to my left, and I just see big brown body laying there with one antler up in the air, mate. And I just said, oi! And he turned real quick, and he's like, I said, I found it. And he's like, Dan, you little ripper, I don't know how you saw that deer to get a shot, but you, I don't know how you did it. Yeah. And he said, I would have walked straight past it. And anyway, mate, like, and that's when I started to record a little bit. You'll see, if anyone watches my video, you'll see. But
yeah.
I just, what I loved, mate, is that I didn't film stuff all. I enjoyed the hunt with my dad.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted, because I don't want to remember it through a phone. I want to remember it myself.
Yeah.
And so this is, and that's how it worked. And, you know, he comes over and I set the phone up to, you know, and that's when I start filming. And, you know, I got the gun and we unloaded it and we start walking up on it together. And, you know, he's got his hand on my back. I can feel it. You know, he's sort of guiding me in, and this deer's just there in the grass. There's big snow gums just surrounding him. Like, mate, and we walk up on this stag, Travis, and he's not what I thought he was. I when I saw the antler, I thought he was going to be this big, huge, mature stag with 6 points. Mm-hmm. I get up there, man, and he's this old mongrel head. He's just like, he's broken on one side. The other side is only grown about 6 inches, and he's a real trophy dude. Like that's what they do when they get really old, which means he's evaded hunters. He's evaded the choppers with the culling program. And he's been living up there, man, for probably 10 years, maybe, wow. You know, thereabouts. And, he's just a trophy, mate. I just love it so much. He's just I couldn't ask for anything more, really. You know, to know that it's not just bad genetics. He's just old.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, dude.
When you think about like white tip, everybody's like, oh, yeah, I'd love to shoot like a 3 or 4 year old with like this giant rack. But sometimes shooting that 6, 7, 8 year old that had, I mean, he's going downhill, but he's just a warrior. You're like, any character, you're like, I don't know. That's pretty rewarding to be, you know, because you just think about how much he's had to survive to be at that. And you know, there's pride, there's a sense of, hey, you know, I finally got one, you know, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, mate. And he was scarred up. He must have been a real bruiser in his day, you know. And so we spent over an hour taking photos and made some phone calls. I called you and Joel. And Kate was in the background, and you know, you boys are ecstatic, man. I just love sharing that with you fellas, and you know, two best mates. Like, you just, I appreciate you very much, as you know, and to be able to call you and have service. Like, rarely do you have service when I go hunting, and to be up that high, we had service. So, I think I texted you boys probably half an hour before that, and I said, "Shots fired," and so I need to be prepped for something.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you get the phone call, and it's just like, it was, because I think for us, it's always cool to get that call, you know, during deer season or whatever, somebody shoots one. But for you, this has been a long process, And I think that's what I text back. I was like, is there any headgear on that thing or whatever? You know, what are we talking about here? Are we talking another hind? That's cool. If you shot a hind, that's cool. Yeah, but Joel and I both know, hey, this guy's been going after a stag for a good while. So when I call turn the camera, it was like, heck yeah.
Mate. Yeah, I love turning that camera around and seeing you boys react. So that was pretty sweet. So yeah, mate, we sat with this deer and we soaked him up. You know, it's such a weird thing. You know, we hunt these animals, we take their life, but like we love them so much. You know, they're so beautiful, and you know, again, being Christians, God's made this, yet we take its life, and He's allowed us to take its life for our benefit in the sense of food and stuff and so on. Also conservation and things like that. You know, the Lord says, you know, like where to look after this earth. And that means, obviously because death came around as well, but which means we also have to, you know, control numbers and so on. So people that don't have our experiences, they just can't grasp it, as you know. And so it's not something I wrestle with. I'm aware of it. And so I'm sitting there looking at this incredible deer that I've been waiting so many years to see in person and to put my hands on. Not just the antlers, it's not just an antler aspect, it's the whole thing. You know, he's got a scar across his muzzle, he's got, you know, scars down his neck and on his shoulders, and it's just like, what have you done in your lifetime, you know, you old boy? So anyway, we sat there and we soaked it up, we took photos, took some videos, my dad took some great footage. He always told me when I'm filming something, he's like, you're going too fast. I was like, oh, right. You know, but he just out of nowhere, like, he just starts filming on his new phone, and his new phone really did it justice because it's beautiful, you know, camera. And so we didn't plan anything, we just did it in the moment, and we've got a really good memory through a video, and he just starts narrating it and all this stuff, and I was like, I just soaked it up, you know, I enjoyed hearing, like, we sat with the deer and he told me a couple of deer stories from his days, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just a moment of a lifetime. And, dude, I'll tell you right now, I've prayed for this moment for a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's Psalm 37. It says, if you delight yourself in the Lord, He will give you the desires of your heart. Now, yeah. Dude, I've almost been to the point where I wrestled, because it was like, I know, I believe that. And I was like, my old man's 78. I'm only hunting with him one time this year that I know of. Next year is 79. I don't know how many days I've got left hunting with this man, you know? Yeah. And mate, the more I think about it, this deer was like, either set up by the Lord or something, I don't know, but it was meant to happen. It was meant to be, you know, for the two of us to enjoy, because we're hunting in country that's very doable for Dad and his age.
Yeah.
We shot him 150 meters from the road. He ran back another 50. That's 95 meters left here. We only had to carry the whole thing 95 meters. Now, I'm not talking about dragging him like you Americans. We had to break him down, like, he's huge. Yeah. He's big as a horse, you know, but we spent 6 hours just cutting him up and doing trips, like, you know, and Dad being Dad, like you're saying, tough man. He didn't just let me do the work. He's like carried whatever he could carry at 78, you know. He's like, and don't forget, I'll tell you something else. He had an illness. He had a thing called Guillain-Barré, which 4 people a year get.
Really?
And yeah, it's a muscle thing, and it breaks your muscles down. If he fell on the floor, it'd take him 10 minutes to get up.
Mm.
So he didn't stop working. His mind over matter. He just, like I'm saying, strong will. This is what makes this even more incredible, is that he's not just an older man. He had an illness that should have stopped him from doing his own job, let alone anything he loves doing.
Yeah.
And so he's in Tasmania, he's trekking down the beaches, he's up in the high country at 4,000 feet, He's carrying backpacks. He's carrying rifles. You know, he's slower, but he's doing it. And he said, I wouldn't be doing it. He wouldn't be dead for quids. He said, I wouldn't miss this for nothing, Dan. Like, you know, and here he is, mate. Like, I'm just so blessed. Like, he's an older man. An older father. You know, a lot of my mates' dads are 15 years younger. But I tell you what, the wisdom that he's got, I wouldn't swap it for anything.
Yeah.
So, you know,
As you've been talking about this, I've thought a little bit about just how long. So it's been about 20 years that you've been Samber hoping for a stag, right? Yeah. And that's such a long time. So in the perseverance that you've had to do that, I just think, like, if I went 20 years without shooting a buck, like I might go try something else. So I might start squirrel hunting or something, you know, but that's your animal over there. It's different. It's a different scenario. But for me, it might relate to like elk. I guess I started hunting elk in 2016 and here I am. I still haven't, you know, shot one, and it's like a little bit different because I'm only going every 3 years. But what popped in my mind was the story of Abraham. Whenever I think of Genesis chapter 9, or maybe a little bit further than that, but God comes to Abraham whenever he's 75 years old and promises him a son. And you're like, all right, hey, it's 25 years later before that's actually realized. He's 100 years old. And you just think about, like, for us, I mean, if I don't get a prayer answered in like a week, I'm like, what are you doing up there, man? You know, you know, there's this. You know, I feel that sometimes. I remember the story of one of the teens in my youth group. He went in his backyard, and like it was like one of the first times he's been gunning. He's in his backyard. He doesn't own any property. And he said, I was out there like a half hour. I was cold, so I closed my eyes and said, God, please send me a buck. Open my eyes. There was a buck there, and he shoots it. And it's a bigger buck than what I've ever killed in my life. And you hear those kind of stories, you're like, what's the deal? Like, I pray every hunt for years, and I haven't shot a Pope and Young buck with my, you know, it's like all this stuff pops in your head a little bit, but it's just like I think about Abraham and like the promise that God made to him, he keeps, you know. And it's and then his time, you know, for us it feels like a long time, but for God it's like, you know, it's the right timing. And so not that God's promised us a big buck or a giant Samber, but there's I do think about, like you just talked about, praying for things, and you know, his timing is way better than ours. How sweet that is that you were with your dad hunt. You know, I mean, there's a lot, many times that you hunt by yourself or with a buddy. And while that would have been cool, like, I don't, this memory with your 78-year-old dad is going to be one you treasure for years, you know?
Oh, man. I just, there's so many things I could say to that. Like, you know, God is not slow as we perceive him to be slow. He's not.
Yeah.
And I have learned that. I've learned that with different things. There's times where my flesh is like, come on, Lord, you know, but I trust him, and sometimes I find myself not giving him the time I ought to. I don't sit with him like I could or should. I talk to him a lot, but I don't stop and sit and give him a time. But he loves us, like, and you know, he's patient with us, and you know, yeah, these promises, like you're just talking about, mate, you know, he, in a man's heart, plans something, but God determines the steps or something like that, you know, and just, you know, gratitude, Trav, like, I feel so satisfied in my hunting career right now. Mm-hmm. If I didn't shoot another stag for 5 years, I couldn't care. Mm-hmm. I actually couldn't. This is the most special stag of my life. Every time I feel like hunting on my own, I go, no, I'll hunt with Dad, because I don't know. I can hunt the rest of my life on my own.
Yeah.
I can hunt the next 30, 40, 50 years on my own. My old man, I'll take every opportunity I can. And so the Lord has, you know, let this happen. And it's just so perfectly timed. I couldn't be more grateful. It is just to soak it up like that, mate, and to literally have him, I could put my elbow out and he was right next to me when I shot him. That's how close he was to me, dude. Like, I just can't get it across how special that is.
I love the video of him just, you know, praising you a little bit, just saying, I can't believe how you saw that deer, you know, how'd you see that deer through that? That's got to feel good, you know, because it's like, you know, your dad's a good hunter. He's killed some good deer, and
for him to give you that, like, hey, I would have walked right past that. There's a sense of satisfaction in that. It was, you know, you saw it, you shot it, and he was there to experience it. Pretty cool.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. So, mate, I couldn't be happy. I couldn't give God any more glory and any more praise to reward us when we're so unworthy, you know, with something like that. He still give it to us.
Yeah. I think about what popped in my head a second ago is about, I forget how long ago it was, but I was driving and I had the girls in the back, you know, and I turned into a left turn lane. Of course, for you guys, it'd be the opposite, but I turned into a left turn lane and I'm about to go across a 2-lane highway to get onto this road. And I have a green light, but it's not a green arrow. It's just the green light, which means I can go, but there's oncoming traffic. Yeah. And I'm got to wait for a gap to go across it. And I remember, I think it was Selah, my youngest, in the back. She's like, Daddy, it's green, go. And she's like, just go. And I'm like, Selah, you don't understand that if I go, these cars right here that are coming, it's not going to be a pretty picture. I've got to wait for the right time to go across here. And I understand that because I've been driving for years, but a, you know, 5-year-old can't comprehend it. And I just think with us and our minds, like, God, why not? It's green. Why can't we get in? And God's like, it's not the right time. It's not the right time for this to happen. And I just think that that requires trust on our part to, like, he knows what he's doing. And you think about if it would have happened in a different way or at a different time, maybe it wouldn't have been as special, or maybe it would have caused an issue. You know, there's so many things that we can't get our minds wrapped around, but God's timing is perfect. And it's just like, it's a faith exercise, learning to trust him and not give up, you know, on what we're praying for, or what, you know, he's bringing us.
100%, mate. And that's far more, you know, this far more than just, you know, in a hunting sense, of course, you know, like last year with the job, mate, like, you know, it tests you, man. And I, what I'm glad about within myself, and that's not a boastful thing, is I'm glad that when those tough times do come, like, it's like my faith heels dig in. I'm like, no, I know what the Lord can do. There's times where I go back and I don't serve him very well, or I don't honor him very much, but I know in my heart delights in him. Yeah. And he knows that. He knows that more than I know that. And so it's like, roll, Lord, you have promises for us as your children. I'm sticking by them. I don't know how it's going to turn out. I was still nervous. I was still stressed at times, but it's like, Lord, you're in control of all things. I don't know how it's going to turn out, but you do. And so I had peace, man. Even though I had a little bit of stress, I knew in my mind and my soul that the Lord had it sorted.
Yeah, that's good. And I go back to Abraham. Abraham had his doubts, and Abraham took matters into his own hands and wasn't patient, didn't wait on the Lord, had a son with his servant instead of waiting on God to bless him. So if you read the story, you're like, you know, we always put these guys up on pedestals that were Bible stories, but they were like us. Like, here's a guy that's like having some... he and his wife are having some disagreements over this. Well, did you really understand what God said? You know, is this really what he, you know? And I just relate. I just think it's encouraging to hear your story and to hear others. Like you said, it goes beyond hunting, but hunting's a part of our lives and it relates. And I just think,
yeah, it does.
It's good. It's just good to know God's got it figured out. Cause if it were up to me, I'd mess it up. So trust him. The timing will be what it needs to be for whatever it is. So.
Exactly, mate. 100%.
That's good, man. Well, man, I've been excited to get you on and to hear that story. Like you said, your video is awesome. Your reaction afterwards and some of the pictures and all of that. And Curtis, and I want guys to go check out your YouTube channel because you do a good job. You've gotten better and better at your editing and all this stuff over the years since I've known you. So go to The Hunter's Ministry. If you look up The Hunter's Ministry on YouTube, they can check that out and be able to see that video that you put out there. And there's a season or episode 1 and episode 2 is where also got some of your duck hunts on there. Also, your whitetail hunt from last year is up there, right?
It is, mate. Yep. And I'm very keen for you to release that when the time's right for your lot over there. And you boys have got some good footage sitting around.
Yeah, we're excited for that, man. So, well, buddy,
It's always good chatting with you. You and I have become good buddies, and we chat just about every week. I've heard bits of the story and read the story on your page, but wanted to get you on the podcast to hear it because I just think about you were episode 16 back when we started this thing in 2019 and April 2019, and here we are, you know, all these years later, and it plays. Man. Yeah, so couldn't be happier for you.
I appreciate it, dude. I love you heaps. You're a good man, and you know, I'm just so grateful to God that he would, you know, connect us together. And yeah, we've just got years to go, mate. So yeah, I look forward to it.
Absolutely. Well, I want to just go ahead and wrap things up now. I want to say to our listeners, thank you for coming back for another episode. Hope that you will come back for more. And until next time, remember to
shed the light.